everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and Manny and I are going to be talking about Secret Weapons, originally a four-issue limited series. I think there have been a few zero issues. I know there's been at least one released. I think there's another on the way, and I would have said before this week started that I would expect to see more Secret Weapons on the way. With the recent acquisition by Valiant from DMG, don't know that we'll see Secret Weapons. It may not be a property that the powers that be over DMG.
It's not a movie property, Jace.
What's that?
It's not a movie property.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe it doesn't translate. I mean, who knows? I don't know what their thoughts are. I don't really have an in over there on the movie side of things or with any people at DMG itself. And I haven't talked in depth with anyone over at Valiant. Don't know that it's really my place to pry about things like that. You know, still very early days over there, and all the wounds are still a little raw, I think. So don't know that we'll see more. I hope we do. Because I think there's a lot of material to mine here. I think there's a lot of stories to be told. So, you know, I guess we'll see. If there's anything in favor of us seeing more of it, it's the fact that this story is written by Eric Heiserer, who, if any of you have seen the movie Arrival, he wrote the screenplay for that. So he does have that background in writing for film. And we saw in the press release one of the quotes from David Mintz, who's the CEO of DMG, was that he wants to bring the Valiant writers closer to the other media type of thing. So, I don't know. Maybe that's going to help Secret Weapons have a leg up in getting onto the small screen or the big screen. Or maybe it just means that he's going to take Eric Heiserer and leverage him on something like Bloodshot or Exo Manowar. I mean, I really don't know. But that being said, I think Heiserer did a great job. I think this is a really strong story. Really enjoyed it. The rest of the creative team, artists, we have Raul Allen and Patricia Martin. They're just both listed as artists, so I really couldn't say. I know Raul Allen's a penciler for the most part. He probably did this digitally, would be my guess. And maybe Patricia came in and did colors and cleaned up the art. Like, I really don't know. I'm not familiar enough with their with their process. So the basic premise of the story, so for those of you not familiar with the Valiant universe and the way their a lot of their characters gain the powers, they're called Psyots, I guess what we would call mutants if you're a Marvel fan. But the difference being that for a lot of these Psyots, a lot of these kids, their powers don't manifest on their own. They have to be what's called activated. And the activation process is an arduous one. It often involves, I guess, the word torture, for lack of a better word. And only one in four even survive it. So it's a pretty brutal process. You know, a lot of the kids, just their head explodes or they die on the table or, you know, horrible, terrible, disgusting things happen to them. So it's very much a dangerous process. And a lot of them don't go through it voluntarily. Toya Harada is one of the main characters in the Valiant universe, often, you know, would kidnap them and force this activation process on them. Some of them did it voluntarily, but most did not. So the whole thing about Secret Weapons is, so Harada can sense that someone has the latent ability to become a Psyot, but he has no idea of knowing what the power is going to be. So the whole idea behind Secret Weapons is sometimes he activates and it's super costly and expensive, and there's a lot of risk involved in going out and getting these Psyots and activating them. So he goes through all this trouble, and sometimes he activates these kids and their powers are, in his mind, completely useless. But he's gone through such expense and so much trouble that he doesn't just want to throw them away. So instead, he puts them in a place called the Willows. So when the story starts, we meet one of the characters, Nikki. She can talk to birds. Nicole Finch is her name. She goes by Nikki. Not exactly the most useful power. And then the story shifts to the Willows, but it's the facility looks like it's been destroyed. So if you're familiar with the Valiant universe, this was right after Toyo Harada, who was seen as a philanthropist and an industrialist businessman. And he was outed by the Harbinger kids as being this super powerful psyot and being kind of a quote-unquote terrorist. So a lot of his facilities, because what happened was the Harbinger kids stole a bunch of Toyo Harada's data and just released it online, like a big information dump. So obviously within that information was the location of facilities like the Willows. Apparently when this information of location of the Willows got released, it was attacked. We don't know by whom. We don't know when. We just know that the kids are all gone and they've gone on the run, basically. And so Nicole Finch is one of those. Martin Tyus is another one, and he's the next psyot that we meet. And he's being chased by some ghoulish-looking guy with tentacle-like fingers. He looks like he's made out of tree roots. And basically what happens is this weird-looking behemoth with the tree root hands. His name's Rexo. And we learn through the course of the story that by bathing in the blood of psyots, he gains their powers. So he's out there at someone's behest, doing someone's bidding, and kidnapping these psyots, bathing in their blood to gain their powers so he can have even more powers. The next psyot we meet is named Owen, and he's a conjurer, which means he can summon inanimate objects. The problem is he doesn't have any control, or seemingly doesn't have any control, over what he conjures. So when we meet him, he's working at a hardware store and conjures something. And it's not even clear why he decides to conjure something or if it's involuntary, but he accidentally conjures a shotgun and then gets fired. Like, dude, why do you have this shotgun? You're fired. Get out of here. So throughout the course of the story, we meet a few other of these psyots. They team up with a live wire who's a technopath, so she has the ability to talk to machines and control machines and electronics and things like that. And she forms this kind of group of ragtag misfits into a pretty competent team of individuals, and they manage to foil the plans of Rexo, who is under the control of a psyot named Scavenger. And Scavenger's whole thing is that he's trying to make Rexo so powerful by gathering the powers of these psyots, whether they're deemed useful or not, because he just thinks it's just adding to the toolbox. And what he wants to do is make Rexo powerful enough to defeat another group in the Valiant universe, the Hardcore. And they are kind of similar to Rexo in a way, like they have things done to their brains that are like hardwired in there that allow them to use psyot-like abilities. But the trade-off is it burns out their brains, so they don't live that long. And also they can only use one power at a time, and they don't necessarily have that much control over it themselves. They have to – there's like a central control place, I guess you'd say, and there's people literally sitting at computers, and they call in and say, I need flight. And there's somebody there in the computer and turns flight on in their brain, and then they can fly. And they'll say, I need shield. And then, you know, the person does whatever they need to do, change, flip something around in their brain or whatever, and now the person has a shield. So they have some control over it, but not the way a natural psyot does. So the reason Scavenger is trying to get Rexo to be super powerful and kill these psyots and bathe in their blood is so he can gain powers to go and defeat Hardcore, because the Hardcore are hunting psyots as well for an evil group called Project Rising Spirit. So a lot of history, a lot of stuff going on in there with the Valiant universe. But all that being said, what we do find out throughout the course of the story is that in a way Scavenger's right. You know, getting a bunch of psyots together who have quote-unquote useless powers does still make for a good team. It is still useful. They can work together, they can use their teamwork, and they can use these powers that are supposedly useless to accomplish things. And they manage to defeat Scavenger and Rexo and become a cohesive team, and they clearly care about each other. So the story in itself, and they call themselves secret weapons, live wire secret weapons, because she's the one that's leading the team. So that's kind of the overall main beats of the story. What actually makes the story so enjoyable is Heiser's voice in the story, his tone, the voice he gives these characters. They're not super cocky, confident superheroes. They're not sure of themselves, that, you know, they're not sure of their powers. They all kind of have maybe with the exception of Nikki, they all kind of feel like, man, I have these powers and they suck. You know, I'm not good at anything. I'm never going to be a hero. I just want to be left alone, live my life, whatever. So there's that. They almost have a defeatist attitude to start. And then as they come together as a team, we see all the characters really grow and start to rely on each other and really become kind of like a family. And so it's that part of the story that gives it its charm and takes it beyond just some kind of cliche, because it's not necessarily the most original idea, right? Except for maybe the fact that the powers suck. And we've seen that before, but mixing that with a ragtag group of individuals who seem to be, you know, overwhelmed and outgunned, and they team up and manage to win the day. That's not the most original idea, but the charm and the skill with which Heiser lends, gives the voice to each of these characters, makes them each unique and brings them together as a team. It's that charm and the skill with which he does that, that really is the strength of the story. So I definitely recommend it. Part of the reason Manny and I wanted to talk about it was because we both really enjoyed it. And also this coming Wednesday, which is February 7th, there's going to be a hardcover collection released of issues 1 through 4. So I certainly recommend it. I don't know that there's going to be any extras in the hardcover, but even if not, just if it's just these 4 issues, it's still worth picking up. The last thing I'll say about it, and then I'll let Manny take over, because I know he probably has a lot to say. He really enjoyed this series. I think he even liked it more than I did, is the art by Raoul Allen. He's not my favorite Valiant artist, but he's solid. And whatever work that Patricia Martin's doing on the book, because his art does look a little cleaner on this title. So I have a feeling that she's kind of doing finishes over his stuff. I love his panel layouts. I think that's where his strength lies. But I've never really cared that much for his rendering, and don't really care much for his backgrounds either. I think his backgrounds tend to be a little light for my taste. But he's got a great sense of storytelling. And like I said, his layouts within the panels themselves are always great. I think he did it, particularly issue 3. I think his storytelling on the first few pages really gives a great sense of style and flow. And it really helps to set the tone and the mood of what's going on. So yeah, the art is definitely above average, despite the fact that the characters themselves, like facial expressions and stuff, aren't my favorite. So why don't you give us your thoughts, Manny?
I really enjoyed the mini series. I mean, it's 4 issues. It's really simple. It's easy to follow. And kind of what you were saying, it's really about the characters themselves. It's not too story oriented. I like the fact that you really get a sense of who these people are, because I mean, let's face it, the premise of the book is that these guys are rejects. These are people that aren't necessarily interesting enough to make it onto a Harbinger book, or to be considered useful by the great Toyo Harada. Specifically, I really enjoyed the way he developed Avi's character. He's the Sayat that has a stone skin. When he's in danger, he changes into stone, and he's pretty much immune to any attack. The only problem is that anytime he activates it, he can't move. so he pretty much turns to a statue. So he's very useless in a way, but what makes him interesting is that he wears a turban, he's Middle Eastern, and for him, in a world where he already has to he already stands out because of his cultural origin, because of his religion and his beliefs, it's that much more difficult for him to be a Sayat, to be part of a group like this. The last thing he wants to do is to cause any more attention to himself. And I find that battle within himself very interesting. And then also with Nikki, I like her interaction with the birds. So simple, very mundane things in some panels and throughout the book that just, you know, tell me a lot about who she is, and that she hangs out with birds. That's really what she does. Overall, the book was really, really well done. I like the way that the book starts just right off the bat. Letting you know, Rexo and the Scavenger, not to be messed with. Those guys are gonna mess things up. He just kills an entire room of soldiers just to prove a point. It's just really well done. And, I was really, concerned about being able to tell an entire story like this in four issues. I wasn't sure how well it'd be able to be done, but, Eric Heisner got it done. Four issues, was able to tell a real cohesive story. And at the same time, leave a little bit there so that we can get those zero issues that are going to focus in on these couple of characters. Overall, it was well done. I highly recommend it just because it's also a gateway comic into Valiant. You get a little taste of what the Valiant universe is all about. Not sure how that's going to work going forward, but for the books that they've put out so far, I mean, I don't want to sound negative because you never know. I mean, the titles could just keep coming. Hopefully they leave the publishing line the way that is with the great, writers, the great creative teams. And, if somebody wants to know what Valiant is about, this might be a good book to just get them started with, just because it's four issues, you'll be done and you'll get a good sense of some characters, especially like, a character as interesting as Livewire, who has so much control over tech and, you know, just a basic villain with his monster and a couple of kids trying to blend in.
Yeah. And hats off to Eric Heiser. I mean, this is his first comic book work and I think he did a great, great job. And the fourth issue ends, it says Secret Weapons will return. So yeah, as Manny and I both mentioned, a couple zero issues, one out already, one coming out soon, I think. But yeah, hope we get more of these characters of the Secret Weapons story, because it wouldn't surprise me at all if Eric Heiser has more plans for Secret Weapons. But yeah, I mean, great job considering he, as I said, hadn't done comic work before. What do you think about the tone? You know, you mentioned, is it Ari? Is that his name? The Middle Eastern guy? Avi?
Oh, Avi?
Avi, yeah. What do you think about the tone it kind of sets with, like you said, not only does he get attention because he's, you know, people in the United States don't understand the difference between a Muslim and a Sikh. They see a turban and automatically they think terrorist. So he already has eyes on him for that. And now with this release of information, with the time the story takes place, now he's got the extra target for being a Sayat. And he gets harassed at school by, you know, other students that don't want him there. He gets harassed by the cops. Do you think that – like, what do you think Heiser was trying to do there? Was he just trying to kind of reflect the intolerance that we see a little bit in our current, like, political climate? Or do you think he was just trying to show or trying to set up a situation where Avi needed a place where he felt like he belonged? Or what do you think, it was both?
It's probably a little bit of both, but just because you mostly see it in his character, I don't necessarily think it's a statement about the political climate that we live in. I think it's more about just his personal struggles that he has to go through. It's already hard enough to be who he is without powers, and now he has these powers that are kind of useless. With him being excluded by his peers, then excluded by Harada, and at the same time still having to deal with the consequences of being a Saiyat in the views of normal people per se, it must be tough for him, and I can see why he just wants to disappear in a sense, because he's not really welcomed anywhere. So it's hard for him to get on board even with the group, but when it's all said and done, Livewire is able to, you know, get him on board, but for the right reasons.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because he's the one who, of the characters of the misfits or whatever you want to call them, you know, not the characters that are not Livewire, you know, Owen, Nikki, Avi, the ones that had come from the Willows. Avi is the one that actually has family still. The other two are kind of on their own. And so it almost seems like Heiser gives each of them a different reason to belong. Like Nikki of the three seems the most confident in herself and thinks her power is cool, but she's still kind of isolated. You know, she still seems like she is looking for a place to belong. Owen.
But if you think about it, she's also the most socially active in a way, because she's talking to birds. She's consistently.
Well, yeah. And she's talking to other people on the street too.
Yeah. So she has a little bit more going for her than the other two. I mean, go ahead. You're going to speak about Owen.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. Like Nikki's the most socially active and maybe the most like friendly. But there definitely feels like there's something missing. You know, you get that sense that she feels like there's something missing and she wants more. Oh, yeah. So, and I think she's found it with this team. Owen, to me, his big thing and reason to belong is he seems to, of the three, be the most hard on himself about his powers being crappy.
His powers suck.
But we see through the course of the story that he starts to have a little more control. I mean, issue 4... when he drops the piano on Rexo and then a forklift.
Yeah, that's great.
That was awesome. That was awesome. You're like, way to go, Owen.
That was great.
And then, you know, Livewire mentions, she's like, well, you know, it seems like your subconscious is controlling that. Let's see if you can get a little more control over it. Because if he had that power and he could summon whatever he wanted, he'd be one of the most powerful people in the Valiant universe. If he had complete control over that, well, I'll summon a nuclear warhead. I'll summon a... you know, whatever, sports car, you know, to get away, you know, it's just, I'll summon Ginger, the giant robot. So, yeah.
That's terrible.
So we'll see. But that seems to be his kind of flaw. He beats himself up completely. And Avi, you know, like you said, he's got that eye on him. He feels persecuted for, you know, his ethnicity and also for having the powers. And I guess it gives him a reason to join this band rather than be with his family, who he doesn't want to endanger. It seems to be his, you know, reason he gives. But what's interesting is, so Livewire, you know, she's the veteran of the crew. She's the one that kind of brings them together and kind of protects them. But in a way, even though she's part of Unity at the time that this story takes place, she's really an outsider in a way too, because she had trusted Harada. You know, she was one of his lieutenants, and she ended up betraying him because she saw him for what he really was, which was, you know, this complete dictator, madman kind of guy. And so I feel like she kind of is hard on herself for that too, for helping him out and being a part of what Harada was doing. And so in a way, there, when you look at it, you know, from that perspective, and it's that old... that old trope that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby used when they created the Marvel characters, they gave each of them a flaw. to make them more relatable and more human, and not these fairy tale powerful characters the way at the time, the early 60s, the way a lot of the DC characters were. So I think that's a good job by Heiser. You know, I did try to get him on for this episode, and there's still a chance maybe I can get a little bit of an interview with him. And if I do, I'll tack it on at the end of this episode. But yeah, it would be nice to talk to him. I think the first time I met him was at WonderCon last year, right? Were you there, Manny? Yeah, you were there.
I was there.
Did you get a chance to talk to him?
Just briefly, yeah.
So yeah, and this series hadn't come out yet. So now that it's come out, I'd love to have a chance to chat with him again and ask him some questions specifically about the characters and any future plans.
Yeah, which,
as we said, might.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Just any other future plans that might be up in the air now that you know, DMG has the right. So I guess we'll see. All right. Anything else you want to add?
No, I still haven't read any of those Zero issues, so I know we have one on Owen coming out soon. I'd be really curious to read one on Avi, though. So hopefully they continue to finish these up, and hopefully we get a little bit more secret weapon. But like I said, if you need a recommendation for a Valiant book to pick up really quick, pick up that hardcover and you'll enjoy it. This is a good starting point just to get your feet wet with Psyots and a character like Livewire, and then you just get awesome writing from Heisner. So good stuff.
Yeah, and I just was noticing as I was flipping through issue 4, there is some back matter in these books, and I wish I'd noticed that before. I don't know how I missed it. For instance, issue 4, it's Eric Heiser on story pacing and craft. I realized a little too late that comic book writing is a lot harder than screenwriting for me, and it goes on from there. So I'm going to have to check those out. I didn't realize that those were there, and I'm curious what there might be in the previous titles. But also, at the end of issue 4, there's a house ad. It says, Nikki will return in Secret Weapons number 0, January 2018. So that's the Zero issue that just recently came out. And it's about Nikki. And like Manny said, neither one of us had a chance to read the Zero issues yet. I did flip through that, the Secret Weapons 0 that had Nikki. And it looks good, and I'm looking forward to reading it. But instead of reading that, I read, you know, 20 issues of Iron Man. But, you know, it's, I don't think the Zero issue is not in the hardcover. The hardcover has just issues 1 through 4. And I'm hoping that it has this back matter too, which I'm going to read right after we're done recording, actually. So thanks for joining us, everybody, for Valiant Sunday. Like Manny said, we definitely recommend Secret Weapons. It's a really great title. And in fact, based on the strength of this title and the writing of Eric Heiser, Manny chose Eric Heiser as his best new talent of 2017 on our awards podcast a few weeks ago. So, you know, if that doesn't say how good this book is, I don't know what does. So thanks for joining us, everybody. We will talk to you next time. Don't forget to go to the Comic Source blog for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search on Facebook and Instagram for The Comic Source to follow us there and keep up to date on all our convention coverage. And we always announce when new episodes drop on there. Also, don't forget about our exclusive podcast over at LRM Online, the 9-panel grid that comes out every Tuesday. And while you're there at LRM Online, be sure to check out all their other pop culture coverage on TV shows, movies, video games, all kinds of great stuff. As far as conventions, coming up in a couple weeks, I'm going to be at the Long Beach Comic-Con. Is it Comic-Con or Comic Expo? Comic Expo. Comic-Con is in September. Long Beach Comic Expo is in February. So going to be there in a couple weeks. It's February 17th and 18th. Friday night, I will be there at the Long Beach Convention Center as well for the Dwayne McDuffie Diversity Awards. So hoping to get a few interviews while I'm at the convention that weekend. And hopefully Manny's going to go to the convention as well. We'll see. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.